ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shea's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Yes, welcome to BJ Shea's Geek Nation. I am the Reverend Enfuego. Across from me is Vicky Barcelona.
Hello.
Show's namesake, BJ Shea is on assignment, but returning from being on assignment is Joey D.
Hello, I'm
Howdy.
Back.
Yeah, you're back. On today's show, we will talk with Gareth Von Kallenbach about, well, a whole bunch of TV and movie news and maybe a little bit of the San Diego Comic-Con rumors. We're going to talk about the infamous episode of The Boys, Herogasm. Vicky got to freak out about a trailer for Paper Girls. Mm-hmm. And then we'll get to the Geek Sheet with Vicky B. Vicky, how can people get a hold of us?
Get a hold of us via our website, bjgeeknation.com. It's going to have our blogs, podcasts, and more. Or just search BJ Geek Nation on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, iTunes, and the Odyssey app.
Yeah. And this is Friday. Lots of stuff going down. And don't forget that Stranger Things Season 4, Volume 2, the last two episodes of this season where we're going to get the wrap-up between Vecna and, our four different Scooby gangs at this point in time. And so those drop today. We'll be talking about it in the future. We'll have to, we'll give a little bit of time on those because we'll have to watch them and then process them. But they are out right now on Netflix. So just so you know that. Now, moving on from that, we do need to speak with Mr. Gareth Von Kallenbach because we do need to get some information about some movies and, some other stuff that's been going down. Gareth Von Kallenbach joins us from Skewed In Review, that is SKNR.net. And Gareth, we got a lot of interesting movie and TV news going on right now.
Absolutely. Well, I guess the big one that everyone's interested in, it was no surprise that there was a Ghostbusters sequel coming.
Oh, yeah.
There's several Ghostbusters projects coming, from video games to shows and so on and so forth. But the big one is the cinematic sequel to Ghostbusters Afterlife. Tentatively, right now, we first heard about it at CinemaCon, where they confirmed it. I mean, we all assumed there'd be another one.
Mm-hmm.
Tentatively, it's called Firehouse, but that is apparently not going, it may not be the final thing. The whole idea is, if you remember, the studio has felt confident enough to say December 20th, 2023. Because, you know, when you think Ghostbusters and Christmas and the holidays, it's a natural fit.
Actually, you know what? It kind of is. So it's kind of entertaining on that end. And you're talking about video games even. And I mean, I know that they are coming up with just a regular video game, but they're also coming up for the Oculus, a VR version, which I am so down for. I have to go get a new VR system. And I'm looking at the Oculus Quest now specifically because they've got that game for sure coming out on it.
Absolutely. And see, and you can take Afterlife. While it didn't gigantically light up the box office, it was well received. It was mm-hmm. profitable enough. It's done well on the aftermarket with that, and it's breathed life into the franchise again.
I love it. I'm so excited. It hits that nostalgia button for me. And then, I mean, even just speaking about nostalgia, you were telling me about how Beverly Hills Cop is coming out with another sequel, too.
Absolutely. Now, this one, I always put it in the I'll believe it when cameras roll, because there have been so many, it's going to be a TV series, it's going to be this, it's going to be that, back and forth for, oh, goodness, we're probably going on 15-plus years now of it coming. Well, what we've been told is that it is coming, it is going to go to Netflix. Eddie Murphy, obviously, back. You wouldn't have it without him.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the details have come out, and it's very interesting. A lot of people assume Judge Reinhold is coming back. We don't know about his partner, but there's been interest. The details that we've got, and this is really interesting, is that apparently it deals with Axel and his estranged daughter and her ex dealing with corrupt cops and a drug situation. What's interesting is, Beverly Hills, obviously, you know, when they go for the permits and negotiate tax breaks, and are we going to film here? Are we going to film somewhere else and have it pretend to be Beverly Hills? Apparently, they're all about it, and they think it'd be good for tourism. However, there we're hearing stories that they're not entirely thrilled with the corrupt cops or corrupt police department storyline angle. In that, officially, they're saying, well, we think it's kind of a played-out storyline, and maybe there's a different way to tweak the script for that. Others say it's also a PR move. You know, you don't really want cops continually to be shown in a bad light. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out, but it is apparently moving forward still.
Well, it's good just to see the fact that it's moving forward. I think that's the part on that. And then, I mean, I get it at that point. Maybe they don't necessarily want to have that dealing with, you know, real-life events, so we'll have to see where that goes with that. But, I mean, even in the terms of, like, going back with nostalgia and, like, even just getting into, we've seen a lot of prequels that have come out recently from stuff, and you just got some news about The Hunger Games.
Absolutely. Now, this one is really interesting. I've read The Ballads of Songbird and Snakes, which is obviously the prequel. It's about President Snow when he was an 18-year-old, about the early days of the Hunger Games, that sort of thing. And there was some casting news and various people, but one that really stood out was they announced Jason Schwartzman is going to be playing Lucky Flickerman. And if the name sounds somewhat familiar, it's because he is a ancestor of Caesar Flickerman, the talk show host, who was played very well by Stanley Tucci in the film. In the books, he's kind of described as a he's kind of like a quirky newsman who gets involved with the Hunger Games and kind of uses that to enhance his profile, because if I remember correctly, at the time of the books, it's the 10th Hunger Games or something like that. So, you know, there's kind of that, is this going to take off? Is this going to, and he uses that to try to advance himself, you know, forward. And it will be interesting because, you know, you look at them and you say, I think that's a good pairing, because you could make the argument, yeah, they could be related, you know, several generations apart.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that would be kind of fun when you look at it at that aspect. I mean, it's a good, interesting world to explore because they're so far deep into the dystopian nightmare when you get into the Hunger Games. So seeing where it gets to that point, maybe it wasn't always there. So it'll be kind of fun to see where it goes and what it leads to.
Absolutely. And the book is quite good. I've heard they're going to break it into two, maybe three segments. But it's so interesting because I'm reading it and you're like, I actually kind of feel sympathy for Snow, and you're kind of like, how did this guy become this horrible monster? He seems like a decent guy, and you understand his motivations, and then as things go on, you kind of understand his issues with District 12 and various things about how the politics and the Capitol work, and it's quite intriguing.
Moving on from that, but getting into the world of Godzilla, there are a couple of projects happening with the old great big monster from Japan.
Absolutely. So first off, we have a Godzilla versus Kong sequel in the works. It's nothing title set, obviously, but it is set to film in Australia, and we've been told that they're starting to build sets. So that means something is going to come very soon, at least in terms of filming. We're probably, I don't know, I think maybe 2023 might be a bit iffy for the summer, more like 2024, but you never know. I could kind of see this being late next year, early 2024, but, you know, when you consider, this also was the product of that hybrid release where it appeared on HBO Max in theaters at the same time. Obviously, they're happy with where everything is going, that they're continuing onward with the franchise.
That is awesome. What else do we got from it, too?
Well, the other one that is really interesting is there is a Godzilla series in the works that is going to be on Apple TV. I have been told that this one is actually further into production, so you very likely will see this first, but it is apparently going to angle more toward the Monarch storyline that was established in the film. Going to keep the Monsterverse up, but apparently they're going to deal with more of the Monarch storyline.
What was that whole storyline? I'm not even remembering that.
Well, essentially that there was the corporation that was tracking the kaiju and all of the things like that. And so that is kind of what they're going to be fiddling around with. And I think it's interesting because it gives them the option to have an ongoing storyline, maybe do the Monster of the Week, that sort of thing. So it'll be very intriguing to see how they play that and how it's going to wrap into the movies, because I would think that they're basically not going to do anything that would contradict where the movies are going.
I would hope so at that point in time, but I mean, I just see a lot of stuff in like the DC world and how everything is just kind of like a flim-flam, just everything everywhere. So, I mean, it would just, it'll still be interesting to see what they do with the series, because I'm just, that's just something I'm not used to in the world of Godzilla. So kind of excited to see what's going to happen with that.
And of course, you know, all eyes are looking forward. People are saying, are you going to see this stuff at Comic-Con? And I'm like, I think it might be too early, but you never know.
And, I mean, you just did mention Comic-Con. There's some news surrounding the WB and what they're going to be doing there.
You have to look at it that it covers a very large gamut. And they've said, you know, we're going to have a Green Arrow animated movie. We're going to do the debut there and have the panel. But there's also some of their other stuff. They're going to be doing, like, the Gotham Knights video game. Mm. They're going to be doing AEW Dynamite Wrestling, which is on one of their channels, is going to be there. And as you were going through, they have, like, oh, you're going to have Riverdale, and you're going to have various other things. And they talked about House of Dragons for HBO Max is going to be there. And, we had spoken in the past. We couldn't do that. And various other projects, big and small. And what's interesting is you have people going, well, where's Black Adam? Where are the DC films? And my response to that was, they did mention in the release other things to be announced. And so it'll be interesting to see what else is announced, because some people are saying, oh, it's scaled back presence and it's not this. And I'm looking at the release going, I see over 20 different things here. You have to remember, one of the big things is they would take over the second biggest room, and they would have this day that had, like, everything from Black Lightning to Arrow to Flash to Legends of Tomorrow, on and on. And it's like Supergirl. And I said, you have to remember, these shows are ending. Riverdale is ending, so you're not going to get all of those things, but there are plenty of other properties from the studio that are going in. And, of course, you'll possibly have activations and pop-ups outside, and then there's always stuff that they don't announce ahead of time, and then, bang, drop it on you at the show. And, my attitude is, I said, you look at Black Adam. He was all over CinemaCon promoting this thing. I know they do their fandom and all of that, but do you honestly think, especially now that Marvel has firmly confirmed that they're going to be there and they have major news to drop, not just there but at D23, do you think Warner Brothers is going to miss an opportunity to come in and say Black Adam and Aquaman, and they're just going to say, no, we're going to wait and do our online thing a couple months later where our chief rival is going to be there in person with all these stars?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there aren't necessarily, like, wars between these people, just like there's not really console wars. But at the same point, you're not going to let the other company go out and promote something and not have something to throw out there, especially when you do have something out there to promote.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, I tell people this every year. They don't sit there and tell you every single thing that's coming. You know, you'll get this thing, it'll say, you know, Warner Brothers panel, but sometimes they don't. I have been in panels at Comic-Con where they, I remember walking by Hall H, which is the massive panel. I had a little bit of time before an interview. I just walked by, and they're like, we've got seats. Do you want to come in? I said, sure. And it was some, it was full. They were finishing it up, and I was like, okay. And then right as it ended, they said, oh, we've got an unannounced panel, not on the schedule. Here's Oliver Stone, Zachary Quinto, blah, 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 talking about their new... And it's like, oh, my God. so that's very common, is that there'll be this block, and you're sitting there, and all of a sudden, boom, here comes this. And, you know, people, celebrities popping up all the time. That's why it's such the big event. So I would be shocked if they don't have something of some kind there.
Absolutely. It's kind of exciting just to see all that. And I mean, everybody gets to hear about it afterwards if you don't get to attend Comic-Con. But I mean, that's also why we have you, Gareth, so you can let us know. And if people want to get that news as quickly as it happens, you got to follow Skewed and Reviewed on social media. You can find all the links, obviously, just by Googling it. But you can hit it from the horse's mouth if you just head over to sknr.net. Thank you so much, Gareth.
Anytime. Take care.
Thank you, Gareth. And now we need to talk about the episode that last week we weren't too sure how we were going to address it, because if you didn't know, there had been a lot of warnings out there on the boys' social media talking about how the episode 6 Herogasm was not suitable for everyone.
Or anybody.
Anybody at all whatsoever. And you know what? It
it made these expectations where I was fully ready to sit down and be like, okay, well, I might need to pause this. It might get a little bit gross. And if you don't know what Herogasm is, apparently every year a bunch of C-list superheroes get together and have a massive orgy. If you don't know what an orgy is, kids, look it up. Or
if you're a kid, do not look it up.
Yeah, well, yeah, don't look it up. Ask your parents. That's probably the best way to go about that. So that is definitely a thing. But when watching it, I was like, you know, maybe the rest of the show has made me desensitized to, you know, I didn't know what to expect, but for some reason I was expecting something way more horrific.
I feel like they have set the bar so high.
And it's not to say that it wasn't. Like it wasn't,
it was still really good. It's just when you've already seen the first episode and the exploding appendage scene.
Yeah. Like, it was one of those things. There was a couple of super funny, super gross moments. But at that same point, there's a lot of TNA. And we get a great reappearance of Love Sausage.
Oh, yeah.
But beyond that, it was like, you know, I guess they've just trained me to accept what I'm going to see there. So as much as Herogasm was a spectacle, I really enjoyed the story building that was going on around it and what was, you know, all the other characters going on, even though they did end up meeting at Herogasm. How did you guys feel about this one?
I very much was kind of expecting most of the things except the very, very end.
Yeah.
I was very, like, shocked. I'm like, no, that's not what's happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was kind of going into it thinking the same thing. I'm like, I think you'd seen it before me. And you're like, yeah, I was expecting it to be worse.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as bad for me, I guess. Like, it's kind of, yeah, I'm at the same point. Like, it was really good. And I felt really awful. Like, the one scenes that were, or the scenes that we're not talking about is the ones with Frenchie and the female.
Yeah.
That was heartbreaking.
Yeah, that was especially brutal. Like, that was just, like, it hurt just seeing what they were all going through on that. And
which makes me feel, especially after everything that happened with Mother's Milk and Frenchie, I feel like it's only at some point this season we are going to see them all take the permanent version of...
Oh, you think they're going permanent with some of them?
Mm-hmm, because we've noticed that there's two different colors. The green one is the 24-hour.
Yeah.
And then we saw with Victoria getting one from Homelander, it was blue that she gave to her daughter.
Mm-hmm, and that's the permanent compound V.
So I'm expecting, at the very least, Kimiko and Frenchie to...
Well, I think
obviously Butcher and
I'm pretty sure Kimiko already had the compound V,
but her powers are gone.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, because Soldier Boy ended up taking away her powers. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely correct. But that has been a huge point of contention because their whole point was not to become that which they are out to destroy. Mm-hmm. And
in the comics, they all already had powers.
And Butcher and Huey in this one is kind of showing, well, Huey bringing down his humanity to fight them on the level, the supers on the level that they're at already. So they're like all in for it. And he even said so as much as that he loves it. He loves it more than anything at this point in time, so much that it has essentially destroyed his relationship with Starlight. And it's just, it's a tough way to go because at this, we're looking right now, as of today, this will be episode 7, and it's not the one we're talking about now. But after that, there's 3 more episodes after that. So we're looking at 4 episodes to clean up what's going to be happening this season. And so much has already happened.
What did you think, Joe?
I liked it. I thought it was funny. I felt bad for MM in the Herogasm. He got the shaft.
Like a Gallagher show. Yeah, yeah. First front rows maybe want to wear some ring gear.
I'm picturing Scary Movie 2, if you guys saw that scene.
Oh, yeah.
Always stay in the back of the line, you know? That's a smart move when you're there. Yeah. I thought it was funny. I wasn't expecting everyone to show up there. Mm-hmm. Like, they somehow got them all there.
Yeah, which was good because they made the whole of that Soldier Boy showing up because he's been setting out to taking out his old teammates and the TNT, which is the like basically Wonder Twins of exploding powers. They were the ones holding Herogasm this year. It's been going on for 30 years. Soldier Boy himself was like, I started this thing, which is kind of hilarious and weird at that same point. Mm-hmm. But he's just going to kill them.
Right. He doesn't want to kill anybody else.
Yeah. He isn't setting out to do that. But if they get in his way, he's not going to stop it.
But we learn, too, earlier on, and even he kind of proved it, that when he blacks out, like he kind of goes into this PTSD trigger moment mm-hmm. where he relives or remembers all the awful things that happened to him, like in testing in Russia, he kind of loses control and explodes, and he doesn't remember it.
Yeah, and that's really what happened at the end of this, uh-huh. which was just he explodes, wastes a ton of soups. I mean, even at this point, like, there's a lot of superhero death in this one.
Superhero and regular people, because they even said that, like, civilians, too.
Yeah, there were some civilians in there as well.
Between, like, you know, sex workers and, like waiters and stuff like that.
Exactly. And then, I mean, even at that point, there were some whose death will be probably attributed to mm-hmm. this thing, you know, the explosion going down. But also, we got to see A-Train get
redemption?
Own a redemption Ish. Hero moment, because he does go apologize to Huey.
I love the fact that Ashley handed him his ass earlier.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, no, like, seriously, like, you're causing problems. Now you have, some moral high ground after all the horrible things you've done. Because,
and that's one of the biggest things, too, if you look at everything, it's like, nobody cares about anything unless it happens to them personally. Mm-hmm. So now that the fact that A-Train has to deal with the repercussions and the ramifications of what Blue Hawk did, mm-hmm. he has to now, like, oh, gosh, yeah, wow, I was a piece of crap.
Like, how was I any different than Black Hawk?
And all the different people he's killed over the seasons, mm-hmm. and you forget about, like,
including his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah. And so it's just like, oh, it's that come to reality moment. But then he also gets his revenge on Blue Hawk. Mm-hmm. But that might have caused him to die. We don't know.
He can't run anymore, which has been a big thing this season with Homelander, like, fat shaming him and telling him he's useless mm-hmm. because he's gained weight because he can't run because of his heart. All the drugs he did has messed him up.
And so at this point in time now, it's like, well, I guess his final act, he's okay with that, is just literally dragging Blue Hawk across the pavement until he's chunky salsa on the road.
But he did, Huey did stand up to him, and you could tell Huey was going to go full soup on him.
He was ready to, yeah.
Until he actually apologized.
Mm-hmm.
And it was heartfelt.
Yeah. And that was one of those things where you realize, you know, well, like, yeah, I'm a piece of crap, and I'm trying to make right at this point. And you're like, well, yeah. You're making it because it's now about you.
Right.
And your brother has been paralyzed because of the actions of a soup.
Mm-hmm.
Now you know what it feels like. And it's just like, that sucks.
Yeah, but now we, and at the end of the episode, we get the big fight between Homelander and Soldier Boy and Huey and everyone.
Butcher.
Yeah, they Butcher. Are just, that was the 3-on-1, which was amazing. They got him down. They're about to nuke him. And unfortunately, apparently it takes a little too long for Soldier Boy's powers to power up, because that doesn't happen and Homelander gets the F out of there. But now he's just like, he knows that he can be taken out. He knows that Butcher and Huey have power somehow. If he doesn't know if it's the, you know, the, if he knows if it's the permanent or non-permanent compound V yet or not.
What I'm curious about, what do you guys think? This is a trope in superhero shows, especially for the villains, happens a lot, and we've complained about it. But I actually really liked it in this case, where Homelander earlier in the episode is talking to himself, like another voice in his head. Like, we've seen this obviously with, like, Two-Face, and even in Gotham we saw it a little bit with the Riddler.
Absolutely.
It's basically a trope that people kind of fall on, but in this case it makes a lot of sense to me.
Spider-Man No Way Home had a big one recently too. When mm-hmm. we had with Green Goblin, Willem Dafoe going back and forth with that sort of thing.
Which that was already established in the
first
movie.
Yeah, it had been established
anyways.
For a while, so it was like coming back to that. It's good because you can see there's some sort of like
inner monologue.
Yeah, and you want, like, there's a little bit of humanity in Homelander, but his own personality is trying to quash it.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that he is so insecure and he needs the love.
He's a witty bitty baby.
Yeah. And he needs that.
He needs love. That's, yeah. He needs the attention. He needs to be loved, but it's, what is it? It's like a, like, you could either be loved or feared as a ruler.
And it's better to be feared than it is to be loved. And, I mean, that comes from tyrants. And that's really like, where all he's getting back down to is like, yeah, what happens when somebody asks him a question about, you know, the business that he just took over, and he's just like, whose side are you on? It's like, what? I'm not on. And then immediately you're like, oh God, I don't want to get my head exploded right here for this from this person because, you know, old laser eyes is pissed off about how I worded something. And so everyone just has to turn into a yes man for him.
Yeah. And like, even with the whole, I think this was the episode previous where Maeve confronts him.
Yeah.
And she's just like, I never loved you. That was all, it's all a lie. And so that's why he, Maeve's in quote unquote rehab.
Yeah.
But the same thing's happened with Soldier Boy when he was talking to, was it?
Crimson Countess.
Crimson Countess, where he's like, yeah. I loved you. She's like, we hated you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I expect this next episode to be crazy. My prediction, I think is what's going to happen is now that Starlight and Huey are kind of split because at the end of the episode, Huey decides to go with Butcher instead of her.
And Starlight quits the seven
with
the
Instagram live and just saying exactly what just came out.
Yeah, so I think unless she's able to survive somehow, I think this might be the Homelander gets the old hostage situation with her and sends her to Maeve area to try to get to Huey now that he sees Huey and Soldier Boy and Butcher as a threat.
Yeah.
Because now he's like, oh, I'm not going to die. I can't let this happen.
Exactly. Yeah, I definitely see something along those lines. Like she, and I mean, it's so weird because obviously, we haven't seen this episode that's out now, so we'll have to see what comes from it. But Vought International has an Instagram page.
In real life.
In real life, that they posted an image of the text of Homelander addressing the Instagram live Starlight did. And it's like, yes, like Annie January is no longer a part. She didn't quit. She was fired. She's just jealous because Homelander broke up with her and she went hysterical, which is also an interesting term because hysterical has a deep female connotation.
Was it a deep sexist connotation?
Yes, absolutely. And so it's just like all of this wording and it's just like.
It definitely is from Homelander.
Oh, yeah. And it even says at the bottom, it's like it's signed Homelander. And it's just a whole just creepy, just cringy thing. But it also just mimics what's been going on in the last, you know, 2 to 4 years of just absolute ridiculousness. You're looking at these things that are happening on the screen and you're like, that is so stupid. And you're like, wait, that is literally what happened, like the Imagine video, like just the fact that everyone's singing off key to try to bring everyone together.
Oh my God.
Which was hilarious.
Or even the Pepsi commercial, like spoof. Like an episode or two ago.
Exactly. Like, and we've addressed these things. They're taking stuff that's happened very recently and you're like, well, this is absolutely ridiculous, but wait, it already happened too.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
if you can go in and online, it gets very political.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're really curious, a lot of websites have been doing deep dives into what a lot of these things mean. Like from very subtle Taco Bell or the Imagine video.
Yeah. So it's like I love it for that aspect of it. They've taken a completely ridiculous comic book, which for all reasons should not be able to be turned into a TV show. And they've spun it in a way, they've diverged from the original material enough that it's not just shock for shock value.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of shock in it. There's a lot of gore. There's a lot of sexuality. But at the same point, it's very on point. Like, I'm loving it. Can't wait to see these last 4 episodes. We do need to move on from that.
I will say, though, that Boys has, they've announced that they have renewed season 4, so we know things are ending this season.
Yes. So it's not going to, well, it'll go a certain way. And we'll have to see where that goes from there. Sometimes when you take out the biggest bad, another thing comes to replace it. So we'll have to see whether or not Homelander gets it in the end here.
What do they say? It's like you get the cat to get the mouse to eat the bug.
Oh,
but then you need a dog to get the cat that got the mouse.
Yep. And then pretty soon you're like using attack geese or something like that.
Yep.
Moving on from that, Vicky, I know you're excited for this. Amazon Prime has put out a teaser trailer for a comic book / turn to TV show that you've enjoyed called Paper Girls. We've talked about the comic for a while. Based around time-traveling paper girls, just at the very basic explanation for it, it has one of our favorite comics, Ali Wong, playing an older version of one of the paper girls in this, and it's going to be coming out in just about a month, at the end of this month, in July, and I know, I sent you the trailer right away because I knew you were stoked for it.
Well, it's funny because literally we were talking about it, and then I'm like, I know that they're coming out with the show. It literally just came up in conversation. I looked it up and I'm like, holy crap, it comes out a month from today. Like, how did I not see any of this, like, a week prior, 2 weeks prior, that they had come out with, like, Entertainment Weekly came out with some of the exclusive images, and there was, like, a quick teaser that came out. So all this, like, literally came out, like, I manifested it or something.
You did,
for myself.
Go ahead.
Oh, this comic came out back in, like, October 2015. It was, like, a limited book, I think 30 issues, but I did the trades.
Yeah.
So I think it's like six of them. So easy to find.
Yeah, a 30-issue comic. So, I mean, it's kind of neat that the fact that it's an enclosed story, something along the lines that we've seen with, like, Chew, or even, like, since it's done by Brian K. Vaughan, Saga, which just came back.
Oh, yeah. Brian K. Vaughan puts out some great stuff. He was one of the OGs for the Runaways as well, writers as well. So the Paper Girls came out when we've already seen Stranger Things. So when I started reading this, I was like, oh, okay, so they're not copying Stranger Things, but they are kind of going into the world of nostalgia.
Yeah.
Because this is set in the 80s, and it's a group of girls who kind of have to prove themselves because they're paper girls, and every other paper kid is a boy.
Yeah.
So they have their own little badass group of girls that are the paper girls. And I think early, like Halloween, it's either the day after Halloween or Halloween morning.
Yeah, it's the day after Halloween.
Yep. They see these weird ass lights, like, what the hell's going on? And turns out it's some sort of weird alien things coming, like, to their weird suburb. They're based in Ohio. And so they...
Nothing ever good happens in Ohio.
Nope. So their town is actually struck by an invasion from a mysterious force from the future, which feels very alien-like, especially for 80s kids.
Oh, straight up, yeah. And this really seems like a Stand By Me, E.T., a Super 8. Like
Stranger
those,
Things.
Totally Stranger Things, yeah.
So the girls become stuck in the middle between a conflict of two warring factions of time travelers. And they accidentally go back and forth through time multiple times through the series, all the way back to, you know, Neanderthal times, to the future. And
the far future.
They do such a good job. There was even, I think, a secret language code that you could decode. And if you can figure it out, you can find a secret message online or something. But what I really love, they put a lot of thought into it. I don't know how much they're going to include in the series. But when they went into, like, the future, like, what, probably like 1,000 years in our current future, they were in the United States, or English-speaking people, but the language had changed so much, like it does here.
Yep.
How much has language changed in the last 100 years? Imagine in the future. So it was barely understandable, like, ye old English speaking. So that's how much thought they put into this. And it's super fascinating. I'm really excited. Ali Wong, like I said, they go into, like, what is our current day future, and they do run into a few versions of themselves as older women. And we see Ali Wong as one of those characters.
It'll be interesting, Joe, because it's time travel.
Yeah.
It's time travel, so I'll be interested to see, A, if they stick to their rules and how you feel about that. I think it's kind of fun, just that sort of aspect, because, again, Brian K. Vaughan has done, like I said, Saga, which is an excellent, excellent interplanetary chase. Just, it's a ridiculous show or comic book, which I think might be trying to develop into a show themselves.
I saw some things that said, like, no, we're not, but that was also from a few years ago, and I've seen others that say yes. He also did Ex Machina, Why the Last Man, which didn't do great, but I have a new theory. Why the Last Man came out, like, on Fox. So Fox Hulu shows, when it comes to Marvel stuff, hasn't been a hit.
No, not at all.
Because they also came out with Hitmonkey, which Hulu is pushing on me. I'm like, stop it.
I don't want to watch Hitmonkey.
I don't want to watch Hitmonkey. they also did another one, and I literally told BJ about this week, and I'm blanking on the name. That's how it was.
Well, and I mean, they did Cloak and Dagger, which I watched like 3 episodes, didn't care about it. Then they dumped it. There was a couple other ones that
they've done. Cloak and Dagger was one of those shows, like, unfortunately for them, like, I'd start watching it, and I'm like, okay, and then it got really good, and it very, like, everything worked, but you had to get a few episodes in to really appreciate it.
I got three, and I was like, tap out. Like,
and same with Runaways. The last season was very CGI, crappy,
So, I mean, we'll have to see what happens with this. I'm excited. I'm interested in Paper Girls. Time travel can always be an...
Hellstrom was the show I was thinking
of. Oh, yeah, Hellstrom. We watched a couple episodes of that, and I was like, meh. Yeah.
MODOK, same thing. Like, yeah. If Hulu or FX is going to do something with Marvel, they need to knock it off.
Fortunately, this is going to be on Amazon Prime.
Oh, yeah.
Which we've already seen that they've done some great things with shows. So, here's hoping.
Yeah, I have very high hopes for this, so... I don't know. I do want to hear what Joe has to say. I already told BJ about it, so he's going to have to watch it. I think he's going to very much enjoy it. And if anybody needs to borrow the comics, not you, Rev, until you give me back
the third
one.
Yeah, I'll give you back Umbrella Academy as soon as I remember to read it.
I want you to read it. I don't want you to give it back.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. I could just give it back to you, but I need to read it.
I have to bust your boys.
Exactly. Oh, hey, the boys. All right. Hey. Well, now it is time for...
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
All right, Vicky, what do you got for us?
It's Friday. It's a movie.
Yeah, movies.
Not a whole lot of movies this week, but I do want to touch on a few and then also touch on some that we've talked about previously and how they did.
Okay, cool. Right on.
The first one coming out this week would be Minions, The Rise of Gru. This is basically the prequel to Minions and how they connected with Gru in the first place.
I thought they already had one of these.
They had their own Minions movie, I think.
Yeah, okay. They had the Minions movie, so...
There's like three...
There's so many Minions out there.
There's three Despicable Me movies, and I think another Minion movie, and then I think this is the second one, I think.
This All right. one has Tiny Gru with a tiny scarf.
I saw that. I saw the trailer for it.
I love that. So they have an awesome cast, because obviously Steve Carell is back as Gru. Taraji P. Henson plays Belle Bottom. Michelle Yeoh plays Master Chow. Jean-Claude Van Damme plays Jean-Claude, as in Claus.
Claus.
Oh.
Lucy Lawless is Nunchuck.
Wow.
Danny Trejo's in this. Dolph Lundgren. Obviously, Russell Brand's back as Dr. Nefario. Julie Andrews plays Gru's mother.
Damn, wow.
Alan Arkin is Wild Knuckles. Oh, this is good. They're so stupid and silly. Like, I've played them for my little brother, and he just thinks the Minions are ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, that's, like, the draw for it. It was like, yeah, they're obviously the Minions for Gru and Despicable Me, but they took off their own life. It was just like...
Bottom.
Yeah. See their little key... They're little, they're cute, kind of like jelly bean looking, remind me of the dudes from Fall Guys, the video game.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think that has a new thing coming up. I keep seeing commercials or something.
Oh, but. Yeah. Fall Guys, it went free to play cross-platform against for everyone.
That's right.
Yeah, so you can like, it's free to play, you don't need like a PlayStation subscription or Xbox subscription or any of that. You can just play it.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, it's really fun. It's like one of those games where it's just... chaos, ridiculousness, and fun. But, I mean, well, we're here talking about movies anyway, so let's go back to that.
It is getting 65% on Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, it's a kid movie. It's really, like, I wasn't expecting it. It's especially since, like, technically the second of the Minions, fifth overall in the Minions world.
I mean, yeah, that's a lot of movies, and I feel like... I don't know how many people are going to be taking their kids to movies, and this is like one of those ones where absolutely you're going to want to do that, but some people might just wait because they already have four or five movies out there for the Minions.
Yeah, and there's a few other movies out, but like none that I've really even heard of or I think are going to be great because they don't have any reviews yet. I'll just kind of power through them.
Mm-hmm.
Hot Seat, which is an action mystery thriller. It's got Kevin Dillon and Mel Gibson. Take that, you know, it's a cyber thriller.
It's got Mel Gibson in it.
It's
so.
Got an IT expert who finds a hair trigger bomb to his desk chair. Yeah, it is what it is. Another one, Rubicon, also has no reviews as of yet. This looks like it was, it says the language is English, but I think it was filmed somewhere else because all the actors seem to have Russian or Ukrainian names.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds kind of like that on that aspect then.
And it's following a catastrophe on Earth. The planet is covered in a toxic fog. A group of astronauts must decide whether to risk their lives searching for survivors or stay in space.
No.
So, I mean...
So that's really kind of what's been going on, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I know next week we're gonna be off. We're gonna have a podcast for Wednesday, but we won't be here on Friday when the big one comes out, Thor: Love and Thunder.
Right? Oh, I'm so excited.
So just you know, mark that one in your calendars. Buy your tickets if you're down for the pre-sales already on that aspect.
And last week we did talk about The Black Phone.
Oh, yeah, the Ethan Hawke movie.
Right. Like, especially like horror movies are hit or miss. I feel like usually. And even if it's an A horror movie with like great actors, it's never going to get well reviewed.
Exactly. And that's one of those things because, I mean, horror can lean on a lot of tropes that critics will find kind of blah.
Same with like cartoon movies or comedies in general, like really stupid comedies.
Yeah, exactly. It's like one of those things where like a critic is not going to be because they're looking for certain things like that's going to make quote unquote great cinema. But if you know what you're getting into with a lot of those movies, you can still have a fun time. And you're looking at if it accomplishes what it sets out to want to do.
Right. Well, this is not just a hit with horror fans, because it is getting 85% on the tomato meter with a 90% audience score.
Wow.
So if you're wanting to see a horror-esque show or a movie, excuse me, and... looks like Ethan Hawke is nailing his performance, so this might be up your alley if you're like if you're not afraid.
And this is streaming, right?
I believe
this is in theaters. I've only heard good things about this movie.
Okay, yeah,
yeah. Theaters.
Okay, so it is in theaters. So you're going to get, because that's actually a blessing when it comes down to horror movies. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I love about cinema, is when you're going to a theater, you're going for that shared experience. Mm-hmm. And one of the best ways to see a horror movie is to have that shared experience with other people in the theater, because the tension in the crowd leans into the movie. One of my best experiences ever, seeing Blair Witch at a 10:30 at night screening with a completely full crowd, and most of the people didn't know what the hell was going to happen, and just the tension was just Goosebump City.
And same on the other end of the spectrum. If you go watch like a kids movie with kids or a theater full of kids, it, like I specifically remember this, and now these kids are going to college. So it makes me feel old. I used to be a nanny, and I took the kids to go see, I think, How to Train a Dragon in theaters. And they started laughing at stuff that I would not have laughed at, but because they were laughing, it made me giggle, and it made that moment funnier. It's like, I'm going to go pack some underwear. And they just like, ha ha, he said underwear.
And you're like, yeah, you said underwear.
And then I'm like, okay, that is kind of funny.
Oh, yeah, underwear is funny.
Right, and so it's fun. Like, that's what the theater experience is.
Absolutely, 100%.
Another movie we talked about last week, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, got 100% on the tomato meter with an 89% audience score.
Wow.
Flux Gourmet has not really had an audience score. It's gotten fewer than 50 ratings, but it is 85% certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's interesting. Which one was that one?
That was the food horror gross one.
That's right. The one Asa
Butterfield. And
yeah, that was the
Christie.
One you were like explaining to me, and I'm like, I don't need that in my life. Like, I think I'll go watch Black Phone, and maybe that's what a lot of other people were doing.
But if you're not going to be doing any of that, Westworld is on Baymax season one starting.
Yeah, I saw that on my Disney Plus.
A lot of other stuff going on. But let us know what you're watching, shows or movies. And until next time, stay nerdy.